This one's good if it goes.
Oh, it did. Oh, my goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic three.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Jones. Oh,
yes.
Oh, I can't believe it. Are you serious?
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
All right, it's the world's greatest podcast, a.k.a. Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, and it is championship game edition. But, Seth, I got to tell you one thing. This isn't a rant. This is praising. You know Jaime Jaquez's family's been staying with me, and I must shout them out. What an unbelievably great family. The mother, aunt, dad, Jaime Sr., mother Angela, sister Gabriella, cousins, all been here. And I love them. I love these folks. They are so cool. And I feel so bad for them because Seth, Jalen Suggs lifted up. Oh, what a game, Seth Greenberg.
Let me tell you something. Like, Jalen Suggs' shot was ridiculous. The game was more ridiculous than the shot.
Yeah.
Like, the level of play of UCLA, only 10 turnovers, 57-47, only 10 turnovers. Johnny Juzang, Jaime Jaquez, I mean, Cody Riley, how competitive they were. Tiger Campbell. I mean, the game was ridiculous. And then on the other end, look, they did a good job on Kispert, and they did a good job for about 38 minutes on Timmy, getting it overtime. Obviously, Timmy got it going on that high ball screen. Jalen Suggs, how about the block and then to secure the ball and then no look, Magic Johnson sprinting down the middle of the floor, Timmy with the dime for the dunk. That was ridiculous. I mean, that was like, if there's a better college player in the country than that dude, I don't know, because he's got a winning gene. Like, that dude just makes winning plays. He is not overwhelmed. I mean, he gets knocked in his chest. He can't breathe. The next thing you know, he's laying in at somewhere getting a steal. Or that game was incredible. Like, Bill's made a good point. No one really lost that game. Gonzaga ended up winning it because UCLA couldn't have played better.
Well, that's a cute saying, but come on. I mean, they lost. They lost. Gonzaga won the game.
Yeah, they lost the game, but I'll tell you what. They had a shot. I thought they had a shot. I believed in UCLA. I thought there was a pathway. And everyone talks about, oh, look at all the points they scored. Look how efficient they were. They didn't play any faster than they wanted to play. They played the pace they want to play. They just made every stinking shot that they had. Your thoughts as you roll your eyes?
Me? No. Yeah. I'm not rolling my eyes. No, they played unbelievable. They played great. Look, every guy, you mentioned every guy. How about Tiger Campbell, man? I mean, he was fantastic. But the truth of the matter is, I thought going into halftime, they had a bad lineup in there at the end. Two things happened. They had a bad lineup. They went down, which ultimately didn't really matter, truthfully. And then when they got down seven, this is where I loved UCLA, man. UCLA came right back. It was the time of game where Gonzaga blows everybody out. Middle of second half, they get it out to seven, and whap, whap, whap. And I got to pitch in for my guy, Jaime Jaquez. Down five, they run the play. He's in the right-hand corner. He don't even flinch. He just whap. Give Gonzaga all the credit. I mean, I did not think that the gods in Indiana, the basketball gods, which are everywhere, were going to allow Gonzaga, and I still don't think they're going to allow him to go undefeated. I think Baylor's going to beat him. But I thought the gods would not allow that win. The gods did. Suggs hit it. Here's the problem. Okay, Seth, let's talk about this from a coaching standpoint. 3.3 seconds to go. You're going to look at that film and say, oh, man, if only this guy had come over there quick or whatever. I haven't done that yet, but you know you're going to do that as an assistant coach.
100%.
Right? That's 100%. What you do as a coach. You look at it and you go, oh, if Riley would have just come over.
We just turned the ball handler one time.
Right. I mean, that's where I say, yes, you can say nobody lost the game, but when you're a coach, when you've coached, you look at that, and the reality of it is, oh, we lost. We should have. We could. Oh, if he would have. And that's what I think of when I see endings like that. But look, let's be honest, Seth. Best team yesterday was Baylor.
Hey, but before we get to Baylor, and I agree with you, but I think there were a couple things. One, why did it take so long to get Andrew Nembhard off of John Juzang? That was surprising because he was not big enough. I mean, John Juzang could just get to a spot and lift over. Number two, you know Gonzaga is drilled in special situations. There was no hesitation. Drew Timmy took that thing out. Boom. No one was looking over to Mark Few. Jalen Suggs was up the floor a little bit. He caught it on the run. Now, obviously, it didn't work out exactly like maybe they would have done it, but there was no hesitation whatsoever that they were not calling a timeout.
No.
They had a timeout. There was none. That thing, Timmy just jumped right out. Bam. And like, no, like that's a big thing. That's a big thing. So Mark Few, great job. So much pressure. They handled the pressure. They met every challenge.
One other thing. We're remiss. Tie game. Juzang has the ball. Regulation. Timmy steps in and takes the charge.
Four fouls.
What a great play. I thought it was a good call. I don't know if it's a great call, whatever. I thought it was a good call. But I thought that Timmy, there's a couple things you're always taught defensively in basketball. One, and first and foremost, is to see the basketball. Know where the basketball is. If Timmy had turned his head earlier, he would have been late to get to that spot. But I watched that play numerous times going back. His eyes, he knew where the ball was the entire time. A lot of times a big guy will stay close to his man. Timmy saw it, read it, squared it, and got the call. Truthfully, that's the biggest play of the night. The bucket was a bigger play, I suppose. But that's the biggest play of the night. That saved their season right there. Hey, before we move on, two things I want to mention. Fight fans, if you want the best UFC experience, you need ESPN Plus. With every pay-per-view event, live fight nights, exclusive originals, and an extensive archive, ESPN Plus delivers. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com and check out ESPN's newest podcast, Daily Wager. Daily Wager is a podcast for all your information on tonight's game and the biggest plays. Listen to Daily Wager every weekday afternoon, wherever you get your podcast.
Now, here's the question. How do we match it? Because you're right about Baylor. Like Baylor was, and I actually, like, because I have no life, I went back and looked at things. So Baylor, before the pause, held teams to 42, 32, forced 18 turnovers a game. Now, some of them was, you know, guarantee games, that type of thing. After the pause, they allowed people to shoot 48, 39, and only forced 14 turnovers a game. Well, in the tourney, they're holding people to 29% from the three and playing the likes of Wisconsin, Nova, and Arkansas, and forcing 16.5 turnovers a game. Let me tell you something. Baylor is back. I mean, you could tell they're over the virus because they're so much more alert defensively. They're so much more active defensively. Those guards are ridiculous. Davion Mitchell is a lottery picker. I know nothing about basketball. He's so tough. And my only concern about this next game is – how are you going to try to, like, getting Timmy in foul trouble, I think, is really important. Like, he had to play with four fouls. He had to come out of the game. Unless they get one of those bigs in that middle ball screen, those bigs can't score. They can't score. So you're not putting any pressure on him on that end. Unless you run 1,000 middle ball screens or 1,000 ball screens and go at him. Because I'll tell you one thing. Gonzaga switched a lot of those ball screens with UCLA. If they get a switch on Baylor, Baylor's going to hold that thing, go flat, and they're going to make that dude guard. What do you think?
Well, I thought a couple things. I thought, and this is something, if I'm Mark Few, one of the things that I've got to show my guys is there were probably, Seth, and Timmy had one, maybe two. I know Kispert had one, maybe two. I think Suggs had one, maybe two reach-in fouls when they had a guy pretty well stopped in the middle of the lane. Now, if I'm Mark Few, you know, as a coach, you're always trying to make your team better. You're always looking at things. I got to show my guys, look, in the paint, we've got a guy pivoting. We've got a guy stopped. We can't reach and bail him out because I'm telling you, Jaime Jaquez went to the free throw line three times because of a reach. Tiger Campbell went a couple times because of a reach. And that contributed big time to the foul trouble that Gonzaga had. So I'm going to pay attention to this actually during the game. I'm going to see how many times Baylor fouls reaching in when they've got the ball stopped in the lane. The other thing that I would say, Seth, I'm so with you on Mitchell. I look at him and I say to myself, this dude gets wherever he wants. If you back off to take away the lane, number one, he still might get by you. And number two, he can lift up and make a shot, Seth. I'm looking at this kid and I'm saying to myself, all right, what do you do with him? You got a couple options. You pick him up a little farther, speed him up a little bit. Maybe you get him going too fast. When he gives it up, maybe you play him like a shooter. Don't let him get it back. The problem you have is you've got Teague and the rest of these guys, Butler, that can all really play. I think Baylor's a better basketball team. I think Baylor's going to win the basketball game.
My only concern for Baylor is who in the front court, unless they're in a dunker spot or run into the rim for a lob. I just don't know who scores for them. They get like 40 points a game to paint, but they get them off float. I mean, they're guards. They must work.
That's what I'm saying.
Their guards have all kinds of floaters. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, I mean, you got to find a way. I just – maybe I'm just old-fashioned. When I was at Long Beach State, we used to literally run the first three plays of the game because when you were in the Big West, they only had one good big guy on each team. The guy that came in for that dude was not very good. So what we did, we would just run the first three or four plays and make that guy guard, try to get two quick fouls on him. And, like, to me, find a way to get Timmy in foul trouble. He played the last 9 minutes with four fouls. You get that. You figure out a way to get that dude in foul trouble, and now they have a problem. I also think this is an interesting thing. We have two teams that play 2 point guards. I love it. Two teams that play 2 point guards. You got obviously Suggs and Nebhard, and you got Mitchell and Butler. Two teams that play 2 point guards are going to end up taking care of the basketball, running good offense, and going to be able to check the basketball. I think that's so underrated. And at times, Baylor plays with floor gamers.
Let me ask you this. Slow down game. I mean, let's be honest. The game was in the 90s, but if you'd have told Mick Cronin before the game, this game's going to be in the 90s, he would have thought he had a prop, all right? Slow down game still goes in the 90s. That's what Gonzaga ends up doing. If you're Baylor, I'm playing how I play. I'm not. I mean, they slow it down naturally with that weaving action, you know, and then they go into something. So they'll slow it down kind of naturally, but I'm not going to be afraid to play up and down a little bit with Gonzaga. Can't turn it over, but I'm looking at Baylor and I'm saying to myself, hey man, this fits us just as much as it fits them. We can slow it a little bit. We can weave it. We can take our time with it, but damn, if they want to go, those 2 point guards, three. Hell, Baylor was playing 4 point guards at one point in time during the basketball game towards the end. That's why I mean, what's this? What's the winning score?
Here's my thing on that. I agree with you. They got to play the way they want to play. They can't get reckless because when you get reckless against Gonzaga, Gonzaga run gets a boop, 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 boop. And then, like, I literally, because I was picking some plays.
I agree
today,
with that.
You cannot get reckless. So you can't get reckless with your ball security, and you cannot get reckless with your shot selection.
I don't disagree with that. Right? But one thing that I think fits into Baylor with this is I don't view them as a jump shooting team. I view them as an attacking team. And I think a jump shooting team, which is what UCLA was for crying out loud, and they ended up damn near winning the basketball game. I think a jump shooting team has real problems against a team like Gonzaga. I see them as an attacking team. I see them as, I'm going to get in the paint. I'm going to get to the floater on the baseline. I'm going to get to those kind of things, kick it, and do other things. So I swear to God, after watching that last night, I'm thinking it's a pretty damn good matchup for those players at Baylor to go out and go by. Like, hey, I'll tell you this. They started running yesterday with Jaime Jaquez. They started running that. They let him be the point guard, ran a little,
got
him the ball back, ball screened him, and he got to the rim or he got to the lane anytime he wanted against Kispert. Now, to me, that's what you're going to see Baylor do.
Well, no, they'll do it with Matt Meyer in the game. They can't do it with Vital in the game.
No.
See, I think the toughest matchup for Baylor is when Vital's at the four. He gives you all that good stuff, physicality, runs, jumps, rebounds, tough. is he going to be able to get back in transition and locate Kispert on those kickbacks or turn his head defensively and Kispert's just going to front cut him and catch it like mid-post Timmy catch, you turn your head, bam, there's a front cut and you're shooting like they front cut when you turn your head or back cut when they turn their head better than any team I've seen that's not in the NBA. Like you turn your head against them and they are, I mean, they cut to score. I mean, Gonzaga cuts to, so few teams cut to score. They cut to score.
I thought Iowa was the best cutting team off the post, but there's no question Gonzaga is. That, you know, you get the ball to whomever. Timmy's a terrific passer, so you get the ball to him on the block or off the block. I'm telling you, those help side defenders better get in front of their man, because if they don't, they're going to give up a layup. How do I put this? To me, I'm watching back-to-back. You know, you watch them back-to-back. It's not like watching Baylor on Tuesday and you watch Gonzaga on Wednesday. What I saw out of Baylor, God dang, I like them to win this game. I think Baylor will control tempo. I think Baylor controlled tempo against Houston in the second half. I mean, I know they were up 20, but I thought they did what they needed to do when they needed to do it. Early, get down the floor, get to the rim, score a ton of points, get a lead. Second half, weave it on top, get into some action, drive the ball, kick it to the net, whatever. Baylor, to me, yesterday was the complete package of a basketball. You know, I heard something stupid, all right? And I'm not going to say who said it, but I heard, well, you know, you go up against Kelvin Sampson, how much are you going to have left for Monday? Because they're going to physically beat you up, blah, 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 blah. Shit. Are you crazy? Baylor got everything left. Baylor was the one beating the hell out of Houston, in my
opinion. Baylor was cheering for UCLA. Because, like, the team you wonder, like, here's my thing. Emotionally, just the art of coaching. Emotionally, you're Gonzaga. You're an absolute rock fight. I mean, every possession, really, just great. People say it's the greatest basketball game in since maybe Kentucky, you know.
Duke.
Who knows? I mean, it was an unbelievable basketball game. I mean, if you're a basketball purist, you're sitting there watching it, and you're riveted. You win it on this emotional shot. You got it 36 hours later, man. You're turning around and playing for championship. If any team you wonder about where they are emotionally, physically, the amount of them, I'm looking at these minutes these dudes had to play. I mean, they had to play minutes. I mean, they had to play minutes. I mean, Jalen Suggs played 40 minutes. I mean, and he got banged up. I mean, that was a physical game, man. I mean, that was a physical game. Suggs, 40 minutes. Timmy, 37 minutes. Nebhard, 43 minutes. Yai, 42 minutes.
Yai!
And Kispert, 44 minutes. Yai! Well, you see, he good at the beginning of the game.
Hey, can I say something about Suggs? Stephen Bardo on the Big Ten Network said something I loved. He said it was during a game, and it was like three possessions in a row. Somebody, I forget the game he was doing, got knocked down and stayed down. Like, you know, you went to the bucket, you get hit,
yeah,
stayed down. Next, stayed down. Stephen Bardo said, man, kids just don't get up anymore. Something like that. And I started laughing, and I'm watching Suggs yesterday. Hey, man, Suggs went down. That dude got right back up. That's why you recruit football players. You hear guys 100%. Always say, I like to have football players. Well, you want to know why you like to have football players? Because Stephen Bardo's talking, and he was so right. I laughed. I text Bardo after. I said, that was so good. They just don't get up. Something like that.
Sucks, hey, man. Two sport players. I agree with you. Izzo and I was talking about that. We're talking about that this morning. Two sport guys that play football and basketball are just built different. They're just built different. Like that dude, he rolled his ankle. He got hit right in his gut at one time by Cody Riley. I mean, he's playing. Like here's the deal. I've been hit. I'm gonna dust myself off, get back up, and I'm gonna punch you in the face. I mean, that's basically what he said. Like, you can't beat him down. He's just different. He's Jason Kidd. I don't, you know, but he's just different. I mean, how about the block? He gets stuck on that screen. Timmy does a nice job of leveling the ball off. And then he comes with his inside hand and gets a piece of that thing. Gotta be kidding me. Now, I'm gonna tell you guys we're gonna have a big game because he was good yesterday, wasn't great. Corey Kispert wasn't great yesterday.
No.
Wasn't great. The release is a little bit low. Didn't have a lot of time to get it off. I think he has a breakout. Like Butler had a breakout game against Houston. I think Kispert could have a breakout game, which would not be good for my fantasy team. Because my fantasy team, I need Nebhard dropping dimes. I'm right in there. Cerise and I, I'm right in there. Got a great effort at Johnny Juzang. Great effort. I'm sending him a note. There's no doubt about it. Johnny, great job. Appreciate it. Good effort. Quentin Grimes, bad first half, but he realized they were losing. He said, I got to take care of Coach Greenberg. I'm shooting this thing. And I'm going to get him a couple of points. Flagler, not bad. I need Flagler to be a little more aggressive. But like to me, I think Kispert's going to have a big game.
I thought that Kispert.
I like his matchup. I like Kispert's matchup against Vital. I don't like it against Meyer. I think Meyer can get Kispert in foul trouble.
Well, I felt like Mick Cronin saw something with Hawkes against Kispert, and they went at him. They went at him. I had a chance to FaceTime with Jaime yesterday. I was driving his mom and dad downtown to meet their family before the game, and they FaceTimed him. And by the way, what an unbelievable kid, right? I mean, the best kid ever. So I kind of adopted him, even though I don't know him. The only time I ever talked to him was, hey, man, good luck. So I kind of watched him like you watch your son play. You know what I mean? Like all eyes on him. And they felt like they had the matchup against Kispert. They went against Kispert early. They kept going. And I thought that hurt Kispert. I thought that the concentration he had to have, if this makes sense to you, the concentration he had to have, the effort he had to put in defensively, took a little bit away from his offense. I really felt like that watching them.
And that's why I think that Meyer's got to play. See, because Vital can't do that unless it's in a middle ball screen. But Matt Meyer, who never saw a shot he didn't like, or as I call him, Matt Ellis, because Alfonso has adopted him, that dude, he ain't backing down now. And he can put it on the floor, and he can go in a ball screen a little bit.
Let me ask you this. There's different ways. Can they throw the ball on the block against Kispert?
No, because Vital can't score.
Yeah.
He can score lob dunks. At least I think. I haven't seen him. Like, he doesn't finish great. Jonathan Chama, Chachua, Flo Fabba. That's the amazing thing. I think that Scott Drew has done a great job of hiding their weaknesses. So he gets the dribble handoff, the high ball screen, shooters around, get one full step outside the three-point line. That's a middle ball screen where you roll right to the front of the rim. Now you got to say, well, do I tag the roller? Do I stay home? If you tag the roller, they're skipping it and either shooting it or, like you said, they're driving that closeout. Like, that's what makes them hard. When they skip it, they all can shoot it. They shoot 41% from the three. But if you close hard on them, they rack it, and they might get a three to old-fashioned way.
Seth, you know, the way to close out, you know, a lot of times it's run past the guy, right? Run him off the line. That's an NBA way to close out.
That was Dejan Giroux. Yep.
Yeah, you can't do that against Baylor. No, you can't. You just can't. So you're in a bit of a trick bag, right? Close out short, high hands, rear end low, short, choppy feet, that kind of thing? I mean, then they just look at you and lift up over you. Do you get too extended, and they just attack you? And that's what I'm saying. Like, I know there's points in the paint, and as you said earlier, there's different ways to get points in the paint. And I think this game sets up absolutely perfectly, not only stylistically, but what you were talking about with the minutes played. Because, Seth, that game yesterday, UCLA and Gonzaga, was you played every possession. Like, you played defense.
Oh my God.
Against UCLA every you did not get a break. Early in the game, I think UCLA threw it off their foot or something, so maybe there's three plays all game. But I'm telling you, if Suggs and the rest of them have incredible energy, then God bless them, man. I mean, and somebody might say, how do you not have energy on a national championship?
Your body only can do so much.
Yeah. I mean,
especially after this season, now here's the thing that has been impressive to me. You know, we West Coast Conference, but now these dudes have beaten Villanova, Wisconsin, Arkansas, all right, and UCLA. And, you know, Mick Cronin had a great press conference because he said, look, at the start of the season, we were at a Final Four team. He goes, but right now, we're as good as any team in the country. And he literally got every ounce of energy and skill out of that team. And here's the deal. For all the people that say you can't coach your players hard, you probably know better than I do. But it seems to me that those dudes would run through a wall for Mick Cronin. It seems to me they love his energy and his passion and that he's coaching them hard and demanding of them as a standard. It seems to me that, you know what? If you get good kids that are good players, they want to be coached hard. That's my take.
That's my take from being around parents all week, and not only Hawkins, but a couple other parents came over. Yeah, there's no question, Seth. One of the things that Mick Cronin, I got a text last night. I was texting back and forth with an NBA GM about, man, always knew Cronin was good. I didn't know he was this good, you know, and he controlled the pace from, and you know what was really cool? In an era where kids got to do their thing, or at least they say that, and the hangers-on say they got to do their thing, you got to let my guy do his thing. Tiger Campbell was so connected to his head coach,
ooh,
right? I mean, he was a – now, people talk about it's cliche, coach on the floor and all that. He was Mick Cronin on the floor, particularly on the offensive end, Seth. He really 100%. Was. Yeah.
He's like this, like in talking with Mick this week, he's like this with Mick. He said they early in the season when Tiger wasn't guarding anyone, Mick told me he had this conversation with him. He said, like, son, I want you to be my point guard. But I'm just letting you know now, if you can't guard, you cannot be my point guard. Like, if you won't guard the ball, I want the ball in your hand. But if you can't guard the ball at the point of attack, you can't be my point guard. I can't have a guy that can't guard the ball. And I used to kill Mick because I'd watch games early in the season, like the Pepperdine game and stuff. And like, they weren't guarding anyone. It was the anti-Mick Cronin team. It was like, and that kid wants to please his coach. That kid, like, he spent, people understand, I mean, and I'm not saying they're going out and having hamburgers, but Mick Cronin builds relationships through, because he cares and so passionate. He has the ability to let those guys see through him that passion is love. And that demand is because he cares so much. And it was really evident. Let me ask you this, motivational stuff. Did you see that? I didn't see the whole tape. He's going to send me the real copy because I saw the video of the copy. Oh, they did a motivational video the night before from all the former great UCLA Bruins wishing them well and talking about how proud they are of them and how that they're ready for this moment, this and that. It's a who's who. It's, I mean, it was Kareem, boom. I mean, they went from old school to new. I mean, Mick said it was like unbelievable. You know, and you got like, look, you got to do things. Before we go, though, I guess your boy Mike Woodson, he's not a bad recruiter, is he?
Woody's going to do just fine. Like, Jackson Davis back, Parker Stewart back. You know my stance on the national media. You know my stance on those guys.
We'll leave it alone. We don't want you to get off of it. But I mean,
Seth, he's the perfect hire at this time. I don't know if he's going to win national champ. I don't know. But I know at this time, with a basketball program lacking momentum, massive apathy in the program, there is overnight with his hiring a completely different feel in the state of Indiana for the Indiana University men's basketball team. Just is.
All right. All right, next question, and then we'll pick the winner. Porter Moser, the perfect place for him to go because he's following a guy that basically has a lot of the same personality traits he has. Yes or no? I say yes.
I say perfect. I say perfect. Right. Great AD. I got a text with him today.
Great AD. He's excited.
Yeah. Yeah, he feels great like this is – yeah, he feels like this is the perfect fit for him. Time to go. And I like I've known Drew Valentine a little bit, and I covered Denzel, his brother. I think it's a great opportunity. Tough for Drew, though. I mean, you're going into Loyola, where, you know. But hey, good for him. He was at Oakland as a player and a manager and everything else. And you know what? I think the hires that have been made: Shaka Smart to Marquette, perfect. Chris Beard to Texas, perfect. Woody to Indiana, perfect. I think that Moser to Oklahoma, tremendous. Valentine the assistant, elevated, tremendous. I think that we've had a hiring run here of things that of people, excuse me, not things, of people that really fit where they're going and institutions that pick the right guys that fit. Good all the way around.
All right, last thing. Baylor, you're picking Baylor. Give me two reasons why.
Number one, I think that their guards and their perimeter are playing so confidently right now, Seth. That's number one. Number two, and I'll make this short. I think when I watch their bigs and their attacking of the bigs of Houston, I feel like in the hotel today, in the hotel after the game the other night, I feel like their big guys got to feel like, pardon the pun, Samson. Not Calvin Sampson, you know, the dude with the hair, big, strong, you know what I mean? I mean, I feel like there has to be a confidence in their bigs to go up and battle Timmy or whoever you want to throw in there. I think Baylor's the better team. Watching them back-to-back, I really felt like Baylor was simply the better basketball team, more skilled basketball team, if that's possible, and a quicker basketball team.
No, I think that's great. I'm still grinding through it. My gut feeling is, and it sounds silly and almost – sophomore, but Gonzaga in Indiana, 1976, Cinderella, you got to get through one of those games. The stars are aligned. Maybe this historic tournament, which will result in another historic game, is the start of our ability to see the other side of this pandemic. It sounds so stupid and so sophomoric and so ridiculous. And so
you can lose a game and still come out the other side of the. And
I know, but I'm just saying. I'm talking about for the Cinderella story. It's a Cinderella story because you know. Here's the thing, Dan. I mean, and, you know, I'm gonna end this. We started the back, and I said, you know, we need patience and plans and protocol, and. You know, now we've shown great perseverance to get through this season. I mean, let's face it. And, you know, maybe this is the ending the season needed. I don't know. I mean, I want to sit back. I left the cafeteria yesterday going to the studio. And I literally left there going like, damn, college basketball is good. Like you always say, it never disappoints. Like I walked out of there as a fan. And as a whacked coach saying, God, this is good. And on top of that, I just thought that, you know what, our game, with all the crap with the 14,000 portal and NIL and, you know, and everything that's going on our game. God, if we could just get people to appreciate and enjoy the damn games, if we could just get people to celebrate the game. Celebrate the game, celebrate the guys who play, be appreciative of incredible, incredible stage that these guys have been on and the opportunity. If we can just get back to celebrating the game and eliminate the doom and gloom around our game, man, there's nothing that compared to last night. Nothing. The Super Bowl didn't compare to last night. Final 4 week, nothing compares. And you know what it happens is you say it all the time, it happens every night. Every night we see great moments.
We do. Amen. Amen to celebrating the game. I mean, you know, try to make it better and all that kind of stuff. But amen. And last thing, I mean, I'm going to tell you something, Seth. This is to your point. You know who is celebrating the game? I only know one group, UCLA's players, Seth. They would do this every year. They're like, we, the kids, the parents, everyone, it's like, we, I know we're in a bubble. I know this is a hardship. I know I can't deliver my son Starbucks. I know I can't, Mrs. Hawkes was trying to get toothpaste up there. I know I can't do that. But these kids, the players, at least the ones that, of the parents that I know and talk to, were saying, these kids are loving this, man. I mean, yeah. Of course you'd rather be on, you imagine, you know, you want to come home to campus and all that, but they're still loving it. And it was magical. And
hats off to the NCAA. Hats off to the city of Indianapolis.
Absolutely. Too. Hey, let me say that. Hats off to the NCAA. Hats up to LJ Wright, the basketball committee, and everybody involved, man, because they pulled this off. They get attacked left and right. And the NCAA is like low-hanging fruit. Something goes wrong, it's the NCAA's fault. Something goes wrong, it's Mark Emmert's fault. That's fine. But how about one time we say, well done? How about one time we say, you know what? In a tough time, you put something together that every freaking person in the country damn near enjoyed over the course of these 3 weeks. And hats off to my city, Indianapolis, for doing what they do better than anybody in the country, putting on freaking big-ass events, man. The NCAA and Indy stepped up big time, and I'm proud to be a part of Indianapolis.
I'm with you. World's greatest podcast never disappoints. That's why, you know, wherever you download your podcast, please download us. There's only one rating. There's no other rating. It's only a 5. Chris Greenberg and Dokic, we always deliver. And I'll tell you what, our next podcast needs to be with the national championship coach.
Yeah.
Yep. Which we will deliver. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.